Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Cover with Jamie and Michelle. I'm Jamie Brumfield, author of Paranormal, Fantasy, Dystopian, and Romance, and officially today, Romantic Comedy.
And I'm Michelle Gwynn, author of Criminal Thriller, Supernatural Action and Adventure, and Horror with a Sci-Fi Twist.
And we're so happy you've decided to join us today. We have a wonderful hour lined up with two amazing guest authors, Gracie Wilson and Diane Ranella. And we'll be discussing the dreaded writer's block. Enter side effects now. It affects all writers in different ways, whether you're an author of a book or novel, a blogger, or you are a business writer, a marketing author, it doesn't matter. Whatever you write, writer's block affects all of us. And we all need to discover our own techniques to get over writer's block. So grab a cup of coffee or your favorite drink of choice, pull up a chair, and join us for a fun-filled hour. If you have any questions for our authors, use the hashtag C2CJM on Twitter. That's C as in cat, 2 as the number 2, C as in cat or cover to cover, JJM, Jamie and Michelle, during the live broadcast, and you may hear your question or comment on the show. Last week, Twitter star was Sins Review. Congratulations.
Yay, Sins Review.
Yay. Let's take a minute and meet our guest. Diane, please tell us a little bit about yourself and your book.
Hi, everybody. I'm Diane Ranella. I've penned 4 novels so far. The latest one is called Something to Dream On, which deals a lot, it's like a women's fiction novel. It deals a lot with body issues of a woman who was bullied as a child for her weight, now coming to terms with her body and finding how much she loves it. And before that, I penned a novel called Scary Monsters and Creepy Freaks, which is a paranormal love story about a deceased rock star who was a mod and passed away in 1968, and he has come back from the dead to seek revenge. Prior to that, I wrote Love's Forbidden Flower and Time's Forbidden Flower, 2 books that are, well, a little controversial, as the main subject matter revolves around siblings discovering that they have feelings for each other that society deems to be unacceptable.
Ooh, V.C. Andrews kind of stuff.
Oh, beyond that. She was weak.
Oh, I hear a challenge. What about you, Gracie?
Okay, so I have 5 books published. My year publication anniversary was on the 18th of May. So I started off writing young adult, new adult romance. And that was The Lonely Girl, which came out almost a year ago to the day. And since then, I put out The Broken Girl, which is the sequel to that book. I started a new series called Storm Corp. And the first book, Determined and Derailed, is out on that one. And then I launched in March another book series called The Beautifully Destroyed. And book 1 is out on that one as well. And that one is a new adult mainstream romance. And then recently, on the 17th, my first novella came out by itself, which is What If They Can't Forget You series, which is a new adult romance as well. And I'm going to be dipping into paranormal come Halloween. I'm going to be putting out a paranormal novella with a bunch of great authors through Boku.
Fantastic.
I'm going to be in that one, I think. Right, Gracie?
Yes.
Yay. It's about the creatures in the bayou.
Yeah, I always say bayou, but it's not how it's said.
So exciting. Great stuff.
So it looks like we've all managed to get past writer's block and get some novels out there. But I'm sure we've all run into it, right?
No,
oh,
I don't
yeah.
know if I believe in writer's block. Can I get controversial?
Yeah,
because I'm so good at it. I don't know that I believe in it. I mean, I definitely do agree that we all get stuck, right? I mean, it happens. Yeah. Like, oh, I don't know what to write.
or were insecure, because I went through that with after I released Something to Dream On. I was getting ready to release, and while I was waiting for everything to do its thing, I'd started on another book, and then Something to Dream On comes out, and the reviews come out, and I'm getting these great reviews, and all of a sudden, I freeze up on my current work in process, and I'm like, why? I was cranking on this thing. Why am I freezing? And I realized, well, with Something to Dream On, it was so different from other stuff I had done, and even though it was similar, it was just very different. And the reviews I was getting, I could tell people expected more of the same from me. And I didn't know if I really wanted to write more of the same. And it made me kind of lock up on what I was working on, because I was thinking, well, if I come out with something else too soon, people are less likely to like it because they're going to expect more of Something to Dream On. And that was the whole problem. And any time I've hit a snag in my writing, I've looked back and I've found it's related to some type of fear.
Yeah.
So if you look at it that way, I don't know if writer's block exists per se. I think fear exists. I think needing to challenge yourself exists. I think looking for excuses not to be productive exists. But writer's block itself, I don't know if I call it that.
That's interesting that you say that. It's my side job is coaching, and we talk about labels all the time. And sometimes putting a label on something is a good thing, but other times putting a label on something is not so great. And it makes me wonder if the label, a writer's block that we put on to an umbrella of different things is really just something that, and like I mentioned earlier, it was the dreaded writer's block, right? So is it our own subconscious and conscious pushing us down that path?
I think it is.
Yeah. What about you, Gracie? What, have you run into that point where you get stuck? And if so, what do you usually do to get past it?
I don't know. I've done some other radio shows, and I've been called odd when I've done them. I don't necessarily get writer's block. If anything, I feel like I have multiple personalities where one book just isn't working, so I'll jump to another book. And it usually takes me anywhere from 6 to 10 days to finish a book, but I have to be in the mood to do it. If I'm not in the mood, it doesn't happen as, like, this beta story that I'm doing, it's not there right now. I got another book that's in my head, so I'm working on that one. But if I'm not, I find like I jump around.
So maybe the best thing in your case would be to go with what is trying really hard to come out, what you're focused on at the moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's
kind
of what I do. And like if I'm, I try not to make myself have these like strict deadlines, because like Beautifully Destroyed, which came out in March, that was not anywhere on a planned book to happen. I woke up one morning and I had a really weird dream and I wrote it. And like a week later, I was going to Sable Hunter from Bo Coop and I'm like, hey, I have a book. And she's like, oh, you have the next Lonely Girl. I'm like, no, it's something different.
That's
so
cool.
She's like, three series? Three? I'm like, yes, I have another one for you. Sorry.
just publish it.
Yeah. So and it wasn't long before it was in edits and all out and published again.
Fantastic. Well, I know even with myself that if I get to a point where I can't, I get, like Diane said, I get stuck. When that happens, and it happens no matter what I'm writing, even if I'm really excited about what I'm writing, I'm going to hit a wall somewhere. And when that happens, I usually have to, and I love my favorite word, marinate on it for a couple of days. And when that doesn't work, and sometimes it doesn't, then I have to fall back to some advice given to me by a professor in my creative writing class who said, when you run into a wall like that, he says, make a change. Stop the area where you're writing. Stop that. Introduce a new character. That was the first thing. Or introduce a new conflict coming from a different direction. And that has always worked. And so that is what I would do, is either I will introduce a new character if it's still early enough in the book to do so. There's usually rules about that. You want to get your all your characters introduced in the first third of the book. So there's that. But then there's just finding a new direction to go or come at it from a different direction. Just go to a whole different area and come back to where you're at, but work your way back. And that's always worked for me. I don't know. It helps. What about you, Jamie?
I'm a lot like, I have a lot of different ways, I guess. I just think over time you just learn that you just got to find the root of what actually is causing the block that you're facing. I think Diane kind of touched on it a little bit when she talked about how, you know, it's not necessarily writer's block, but it's other things like being stuck or, you know, whatever might be the case. But I think once I figure out what the root of the issue is, I'm able to use one of my techniques to overcome it. A lot of times if I have writer's block, I'll do what Gracie mentioned. I have like 4 books that I'm currently working on. And if one gets me blocked, I open up the next one, which is right at the bottom of my computer screen. I just start on that one. I read a couple pages, go back and come back and start writing again. And it's getting that freshness. And it's kind of the same thing as you're talking about, Michelle, only not in a linear way, because I will stop what I'm doing and I'll add a new thing to it, but I'm adding a new manuscript to it. So I guess that's kind of the way I do it. And if all else fails, go meditate. Take some mini me time. And in meditation is, I'm a strong proponent to meditation. I think it's a wonderful tool and it will help clear your mind. So that's some of the techniques I use.
Yeah, and I know sometimes, and people who may be listening can know this, now and again, Jamie and I start chatting in the middle of the night when everybody else is sleeping, and she'll tell me what she's working on, and I'll say, ooh, that sounds good. Is this going to happen or this going to happen? And she goes, oh, that's a good idea. Or she'll do that to me, and that's a really good idea. So sometimes we just kind of inspire each other if we just talk to fellow writers.
Never underestimate your friends and how much they add value to definitely inspiring you. That's a wonderful point, Michelle. Wonderful point.
Yes. I just told everybody our secret. I would say, Jamie, that means that writer's block is probably a good thing if we want to keep calling it writer's block, that moment where we hit a little snag. It can be a very good thing. So what do you think, Diane, as far as when you do hit that snag, do you think it helps what you're doing?
Definitely. And something I've learned, when I hit a snag, I will do one of two things. First, I just keep writing, because usually it's just a matter of, you know what, it's my brain telling me I'm not good enough or I'm not succeeding somehow. So I just keep writing. And if I still just feel like I can't get through it, I'm willing to walk away. You know, I'm not one of the gifted people who can sit down and just crank out a book and it's great. There are people who can do that, and it's not me. I need to walk away. I need to think about what's going on with my characters, what's in their head. I don't know, maybe I have an acting background, and I encourage all writers to take acting classes, because it really makes you get your head around different dimensions of a character. And sometimes
I just
need to walk away and let that skill kick in. And then I come back and go, oh, my God, what was I thinking? Because, of course, this character should be thinking all these other things that I don't have her thinking, and that's going to make her do this thing, which will make this other person do that thing. And before I know it, I have the answer. So either push forward, and when that doesn't work, I let myself walk away and not worry about it. I give myself that gift.
Oh, that's cool. That is, and you know, that's a good point, Diane, because if you think about it, all writers have that within them, the acting within them, because aren't we creating characters that are acting?
Absolutely. And if you take even just one basic acting course, or there's a wonderful book that I recommend to everybody called The Power of the Actor. Read through that. There's all, I think it's 12 different steps to creating your character. And think about how that applies to the character you're writing and creating. Because there's, you know, whether it's scene motivation, line motivation, there's reasons for everything your character does. And sometimes as writers, we know that, and we have to find a way to let the audience know it. Sometimes as writers, we haven't thought it through, and we leave it too open to audience interpretation, and that's where the readers go, what the heck is this person talking about? So,
right.
asking those people really gets your head. Yeah, it really gets your head in a different place.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Gracie, what about you when you're writing? Do you think that that helps you? And if so, then how do you think that helps you? And what's your what's the word I'm looking for, Jamie? Your strategy in that department.
Yeah, strategy. Well, I know, like, a lot of people give themselves, like, deadlines, and I think that's my biggest thing is I don't do that to myself. I know it annoys a lot of people. As Jamie knows, I'm like, oh, yeah, this book should be done soon, and then it just doesn't happen. But what I did is instead of my first book series is, like, a series where all the characters are the same all the way through. And I found that book series is really hard for me to consistently, like, write book 1 to 5. Like, it's very difficult for me to do that. So what I did was I came up with a different book series, which is the Beautifully Destroyed series. And each book is about new people. So, you know, in this first book, it's Cameron and Fate. If they're not talking to me, but Naomi and Jared, who are in book 2, were, then I went to that book. So right now I have 5 Beautifully Destroyed books that have about 20K in them. Done. So I hop back and forth with whoever's deciding to talk to me that day. And it makes me sound completely insane, and I think that's just kind of how writers are these days. It's just we're a lot more open about it.
Yeah.
Artists are always considered to be insane, and if an artist isn't considered insane, he or she is doing it wrong.
That's right.
Power to the artist. Power to the artist. That's very true. Go ahead, Michelle.
Oh, I was just saying, welcome to our insanity, because, you know, that it's what we do that entertains anyway. I mean, that's the whole point. We want to get something out there that's going to make people feel entertained and either feel good, feel bad, feel something, and definitely be able to think and talk about it. And if they're talking about it, that's even better. Talk about it with your friends. Spread the word. We love that.
Well, look at it this way. We all know who Van Gogh is, and while I am not denying that the man had a very unique style of art, would we be as familiar with Van Gogh today as we are if he hadn't cut off his ear, or would he just be another painter that went unnoticed?
Oh, I know.
Yeah, that was a really good question. So how about to all the listeners out there, do you think that your writer or your favorite authors embracing their inner zaniness is, or for lack of a better word, craziness, is a good thing? And do you like getting to know authors that show that to the world? Because like Tracy said, we're more open about it. We're more open about being, adventurous, and we're more open about it, sharing the craziness that goes on in our head or the zaniness that goes on in our head with our characters. So to the writers, hashtag C2CJM, let us know. Do you like authors that pass that boundary of, you know, zaniness? Or do you like your authors being, you know, just quiet, mathy, and not engaged? So we'd like to hear that. Shout us out at Twitter.
Yeah. So I think talking about our craziness. I think our craziness comes out in our work, and I don't know if we could call it craziness. I think we're almost exhibitionists, because we really do put ourselves out there. When we get through that fear and we put it down onto the page, whatever it is, because let's face it, we write what we know, we infuse that with things that we're interested in, and we make this cake that we hope everybody's going to just love. But it is us. Essentially, it is us. It is, every character has a little spark of us in it. It's some little part of us. So I really like you made, Diane, about fear.
Well, you know, I think whatever we write, whether or not we agree with it, we have to be willing to back it up and state our opinions on it.
Right.
And that may sound a little cryptic. When I released my first novel, Love's Forbidden Flower, and it's got the sibling romance, I got tons of letters from people saying, do you believe in this? I got all kinds of places tracking me down going, hey, this person wrote this thing and let's talk to her about it. Like, really? Do you think this? Do you think that? You need to be prepared to, in some ways, defend what you write. And at first I thought that just went for taboo subjects, but it really doesn't. It goes for any character you write, because, and it's not so much that you have to defend them, it's that you have to understand them. You have to be able to talk to people about them. Because if you can't do that, you're not in tune with your work and your characters.
Right.
I think that's part of the creativity that gets overlooked a lot. And it's, I think it's really important. And it's one of those things that if we can't do, leads to the so-called writer's block.
Yes. I think you're right. You know, and I write more than just books. I also, as a journalist, I'm an online contributor with Examiner.com, and I write for Sex and Relationships. And I started a whole Fetish Friday thing. And I wrote these articles every Friday. I would look for a new angle on a different fetish. And it's not because I'm a fetishist, or I don't think so. I mean, everybody's got their own thing, I guess. But I just found the subject very interesting, and I wanted to learn more about it. And in my learning about it, I was introducing it to other people. And I started getting all kinds of emails from people asking me, you know, well, do you think it's normal that I feel this way, or is this what you like? And, well, where can I go in San Antonio to find swingers, you know? And I thought, well, gee, I don't know. I haven't researched that one yet. Let me find out for you. So you're right. You have to be willing to talk to people about it and tell them where you're coming from and be open to where they're coming from. So, Gracie, what about you with the subjects of your books?
Well, when Lonely Girl came out, Lonely Girl is loosely based on my life. So it was hard for me when people started actually reading it. I don't think I actually expected it when I published it, that anybody would actually go out of their way and read and fall in love with these characters that, you know, originally I had taken from people in my life and the story of, you know, me being a young adult and going into adulthood. So it was difficult. But now that the series has grown and it's somewhat taken on a life of its own, the characters have become their own people and other people that are in my life, it became easier for me to talk about. So, and, you know, I always get questioned, well, which one did you marry? Because it's always been known that I've married one of the guys in the Lonely Girl series. So I still get that question, which I find pretty comical, because I tell them I'm not going to tell them anyway until the last. They won't know until the last page of the last book. So, I've been called the Queen of the Cliffhangers and all sorts of Jedi mind tricks and all sorts of new names that keep coming out. But when I went to the Beautifully Destroyed series, I had a lot of people who had come to me because that book touches on some extreme subjects. I had Rachel Van Dyken do a, she read it and gave her opinion on it and gave me a little blurb. And, you know, she said that I handled tough subjects very well, and she recommended that people read it, and that really helped, and it got the book out, and a lot more people read it. But with that being said, I had people that had come to me that were, you know, sexually molested as children, or, you know, taken advantage of by people in authority level, and it was difficult, but I understood that they were relating to a character that I had written, and to be able to give them that, you know, that silver lining, and that, you know, because a lot of people that have become victims like that, they just can't move past that spot that they're in to get into a healthy relationship. And to see that transpire in one of my books, honestly, the thoughts from people and the words that they said were just incredible. And it definitely made me realize that our books are so much more than just our words. They become other people's lives, and they're a way to get out of reality.
Yeah, that's true. And so all the more better reason for us to push on and do what we do if we're able to reach out and touch some people. I mean, Jamie does that so well with not just her books, but her coaching. And Jamie, have you run into that with some of your fans?
You know, it's a... Yeah, I do. I was kind of like, when Gracie was talking, my mind was going to, you know, those tough subjects. And I try to touch on those tougher subjects. I think Diane mentioned that she wrote about, you know, a relationship between a brother and sister in a book, which is controversial. And Michelle, your criminal erotic series has some very controversial stuff in regards to pedophiles. So, I mean, those controversies that I think are make a huge impact, and you all write them so well. And I think that me personally, I sometimes shy away from it, and I don't know if it's because I'm a coach and I deal with a lot of stuff on a daily basis with people that I work with individually, so I see it a lot. But in my books, I like to go to the fantasy side. When I do start writing a topic that's more controversial, I find myself getting stuck because I keep wondering, should I write about this? How are fans going to react? And how am I going to feel? Is it going to bring out emotions within me? And so I think that becomes a block for me that I try to work past in some of my books. But I try to take it on the lighter side when I deal with those. But I know that the three of you, you have some amazing works that deal with, you really dig into those more controversial topics. And I totally respect that. I think that's a beautiful thing.
Oh yeah, and it's hard to go there. It's hard, but I think probably the reason that I could say that I do it, and you ladies may agree, is because I feel so very passionately about bringing awareness to people. I want some kind of a meaning in everything that I do write. I want to be able to open up conversations on subjects that we need to be paying attention to, because they're happening around us all the time, and it could happen to us, it could happen to somebody we know, you know. I write a lot about, in my criminal erotic series, about sex trafficking for women and children, because I feel like that is something that it's happening everywhere, and it's happening right under our noses. I mean, you can go on Craigslist, and those women that you see being advertised are mostly kids that have been taken, and they're forced into this lifestyle, and I don't think we do enough about it. I want us to do more, and I want that topic to not be taboo and hush-hush. So I write about it, but I'm also cautious about how deep I go into it, because I don't want to trigger an ugly memory for somebody to the point where it's just in bad taste. And I also, for me, it is repulsive what happens to these kids. I mean, it makes me cry. So if I'm writing that, I mean, I do have that emotion and that feeling, and I want people to feel that. But I don't know how far to go sometimes, and so if I think it's too far, I'll pull back. But I don't know. What about you, Diane and Gracie? What do you guys think?
I think you always need to take a story where it needs to go. And
yeah,
I started writing Love's Forbidden Flower because I got angry. I saw a film, I'm a big 60s counterculture film fan, and I saw a film called The Buttercup Chain, and there was a subtext that these first cousins were soulmates, and the girl wanted to act on it so badly, and the guy didn't, and it had this bad ending for them because he's heartbroken because he won't act, and it was just, I got so infuriated. I'm like, why don't we talk about this? Why don't we write about this? And at the time, the only other book I could find out there that dealt with the subject of flowers in the attic, and it deals with it extremely poorly. And I thought, gosh, you know, what's the big deal? And I did some research, and I found that 10 to 15% of college-age adults have had some type of relationship with a sibling. And I thought, gosh, it's so common. You know, where does this story need to go? And so I really thought about, as a human, as somebody who loves, what does that feel like? What does it feel like when it's not returned? What does it feel like when it's supposedly wrong? And you put that into it. And if you don't give the story at least those things, you're not telling a story.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. Gracie, what about you with your Lonely Girl? Or I'm sorry, your Lost Girl?
Well, Lonely Girl, it doesn't have the, like, she wasn't an abused child or anything, but she was. In the first page of the book, her boyfriend dies, which is actually factual to my life. So when I wrote it, you know, it brought up a lot of harsh feelings for me, but it also gave me an outlet. And I think, you know, from what the readers have told me, it gave them an outlet to look at where you know, Becca was coming from. A lot of people said she was immature. Well, she was 17. I was 16 when it happened, and I know I didn't handle it maturely, so I didn't write her maturely. I wrote her as, you know, a 17 turning 18-year-old who just had her whole world rocked. And when it came to Fate and Beautifully Destroyed, she is molested as a child by someone that is supposed to protect her. And she has flashbacks, but I made sure that my flashbacks were in good taste, that there was no actual acts described, and that it was enough that until the very end of the story, you had no idea exactly what had transpired and what she truly felt about her past. My new book that I'm working on right now is called Finding Darby, and it involves sex trafficking. And it involves her being sold into sex trafficking by somebody that was supposed to protect her and take care of her. And now, you know, it's an anti-hero story, which, you know, a lot of people are calling taboo these days, or the fact that it involves sex trafficking at all with children. Yeah. But as you said, it's so common. People just, they decide either not to look at it or not to acknowledge it. But I see it all the time. It's all over the internet. It's all over the TV. It's happening right around the corner. It's not just something that's happening in other countries now. Like, I'm Canadian, and it happens here. I know it happens in the States. It's everywhere now. So for us to not talk about it, not talk about suicide or, you know, child abuse in any kind or sex trafficking, it just seems like then we're just glossing over stuff that is happening that people do want to, they do want to be able to read, and that's their choice. So I always make sure that readers know going in, you know, this has this kind of, I give a warning, if that's
right.
That's probably the best way to put it. I always try to give a warning away, and, you know, there are some books that, you know, just I've read and I'm like, oh my goodness, I don't know how somebody could write that. But then, you know, I know that somebody can say the same thing about my books. It all depends on what a person's personal trigger is, and it's always about trying to find that gray area so that you're not, you know, totally putting someone in the black.
Right.
I think Gracie brings up some great points. First of all, I live in San Francisco, and I know anytime I drive across the bay over into Oakland, there are billboards about sex trafficking. So it's being talked about more, which is both wonderful and scary that we have to. So, yes, we do need to talk about these things. And something else Gracie brought up about the age of a character. And this actually will tie in strangely to writer's block. My character in Love, Strip, and Flower, Lily, starts off as a 16-year-old. So she's this confused 16-year-old with feelings for her brother. She acts like a 16-year-old, which is so important because she is. And in a review, I got canned for Lily's immaturity. And I'm like, she's 16. You know, there's this one thing they're bagging on. I'm like, she's drunk and wasted because she's 16 and being stupid. You know, you've got to be true to the character. And then you read something like that, and you go to your work in process, and you can't help but think what somebody said about your character that you knew you had to do, but then it blocks you from progressing on your next work, and then you get writer's block. So you have to be totally true to yourself. You have to be true to the story. You have to be true to your characters, because that is so important. I got panned in a review for my second book because somebody wanted me to do something with my characters that was completely out of character and was mad that I didn't. That led to writer's block. It's this terrible slippery slope, which is a term I hate, but it's so true. And all you can do is stay to your guns, tell the story you need to tell, do it the best way you feel possible, be true to the character, be true to the subject matter. Don't let all this extraneous stuff block the creative process.
Oh, you're so right. That happened with a review on Harvest. My lead character, Dave Forrester, he's a very nice guy. He was raised right. He's socially conscious. And somebody said, well, I like the book, except all evidence to the contrary of how nice he seemed to be. He had this moment of, you know, just really being a self-absorbed, you know, butthead. And I thought, well, yeah, but we, no matter how nice any of us are, we have our moments. If somebody hurts us, we're going to, you know, feel a little sorry for ourselves. So, of course, he's going to have that moment because of what happened to him. I thought, well, okay, you know, if you either get it or you don't get it, and I can't force that on anybody, but it did make me think, and I even went back and reread it and thought, well, you know, was that really out of character for him, or was that just his humanity? So for me, it was his humanity.
You know, that the topic that we're talking on right now, it kind of brings up a great, great question. I know when I first started out writing, it was about, I was nervous about hearing what other people thought about the books, and I would be, you know, anxious about the reviews. I've pretty much gotten over that. I read the reviews with a critical eye, and I say, okay, yeah, that's great criticism, or hey, that's a wonderful review, that kind of thing, but I moved past it. But I know in the beginning, I had a bit of writer's block because I was taking what everybody was saying. And I was, like, allowing other judgments of the book or what I was writing to impact me as far as my writing process. Do you find that you did that before in the past, or do you find that you've gotten past that kind of thing? What do you guys think?
Oh, I did it. Me, jumps up and down, wildly raised her hand. Because of the stuff I had said before with the Forbidden Flower books, when I wrote Scary Monsters, I sent my draft to my critique partner, and she came back to me and said, I can't read this. I'm having a hard time with it. This character is just, what are you doing with this character? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, this character doesn't make sense, and I think you want her to be this way, and she's that way, and what's wrong with you? And she actually just basically said, what is wrong with you, Diane? And I sat back and I went, oh, my God, the entire time I wrote this character, I had the voice of one person, not a professional reviewer, some random person who reviewed, going through my head about something they didn't like in one of my books. And it completely ruined how I presented Scary Monsters. I went back through with that in mind. Once I figured it out, I went through, I rewrote it, I handed it back to my critique partner, and I said, now. And she goes, oh, my God, this is a completely different book. This is the book that I thought you wanted to present. And I actually didn't wind up changing all that much. I just had to identify that one element that was causing writer's block that made me write bad things and trying to get past it. And go, that's the problem, fix it. And then I had a book that I am insanely proud of. So, yeah, it creeps
in. Love that. That's my favorite of your books, by the way.
Thank you.
Oh, I love it.
I'm working on another book in the universe, so yay.
Write more, but just so you know, that's my go-to.
Thank you. Yay.
But it's true. If somebody makes you second-guess yourself, and it's okay to second-guess yourself sometimes, don't let it change who you are. Just if it makes you more aware and willing to go back and look at something, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to change your mind or change the wording of the book. But just be willing to say, okay, well, what did you not like or what confused you? Let me see if I can clear that up, or let me see if it was clear and maybe you missed something. But you're right.
And in this case, it wasn't even worth that. I let somebody who wasn't a reviewer say something that actually didn't make much sense the more I thought about it, except how I wrote. And there are sometimes you read a review and you go, you know what, that person's absolutely right. If I had done that differently, if I would change the style of writing in this way, it might be better, and there are sometimes it makes sense. But then there are those who don't understand character creation or they don't understand writing, and they put something out there and you let it get under your skin. And so there's good stuff to be pulled, there's bad stuff to be pulled, and you as the artist have to decide what's best for your art.
Right, because it's all subjective.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that's the key word. I think what we're going over here is that it's art. It's just like Van Gogh and his paintings or Impressionism and those kind of things. It's art. As an author, you're creating a work of art. And people are going to love it. People are going to hate it. People are going to be like, meh.
Yeah. It is our own form of truth. And
exactly.
When we put it out there, it's truth to us. And we hope other people connect to it. But if you don't, that's okay, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Beautiful. How about you, Gracie? Want to weigh in on this one?
I think you guys really said it all. I honestly, I'm probably the worst for reviews. I don't go and check them. Debbie from Book Group actually has to send them to me because I don't check them. I did when I first started, and I got slammed really, really bad for Becca being so immature. And as I said, she's 17 and lost her boyfriend and, you know, has been, you know, going through a lot. And I got slammed so hard for her being immature and, you know, when she was ready to, you know, fall in love again, that she was back and forth and back and forth as if she should do it or should not do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I, that was probably the last review that I read in depth by myself without being, you know, sent there to look as, like, Debbie, she'll send me things. Or my PA will make sure, like, I get it so that I can share it on my page and stuff. But I know some of my author friends are on Goodreads and Amazon all the time. And I couldn't do it because I probably wouldn't write. I would probably be like, yep, I suck. And like, this is done. Why am I doing this? People hate me. So I don't check it out.
Yeah.
And I find that might be what, you know, helps me keep my head clear, is that I only have me and my characters in there. But I do have a great beta team who I'll send them my books. Like, right now I've got 5 books going on, and each one of them has a different book. And then I swap them around, and they'll read them, and they'll tell me what they like, where this is going. And I had a book that I had almost finished. It was almost a chapter done, and I didn't like it. So I didn't just save it on my computer. I disliked it so much, I deleted it. And it was 70,000 words. And so many of my author friends are like, oh, my God, what did you do? I'm like, no, it's not. It wasn't. It was me trying to be something I wasn't.
Yeah,
and it was me taking. I took a stab at third person, and I don't write third person.
Oh.
And I just,
amen.
Yeah, I can't write it. Honestly, I can't even read it. I think the only book I've read that's third person, like, unless it's been like a book that I've had to read because it, you know, it was coming into a movie, and I'm that person that needs to read the book first. Fable Hunter is the only other person I've read that's really third person, and it's. I don't enjoy third person, and I don't know if that's because, you know, I call myself a book snob when it comes to certain books and genre types. So I tried to write third person because that was what, you know, a lot of people had said, oh, yeah, third person is what's selling. Third person is what's, you know, what's going on, and people enjoy it because they get more out of the story. And I wrote it, but I hated the story. It didn't even sound like Gracie. Like, I had sent it to some of my betas, and they're like, this is not a Gracie story.
That's an interesting
third person point. Makes me feel disconnected. It makes me feel like I'm having an out-of-body experience. And, in fact,
yes.
I mentioned earlier that I'm doing another book in the Scary Monsters universe, and the prologue in it is in third person. And every time I go over it, it messes with my head. And I'm going to have my critique partner shred it for me because third person and I don't gel. And, you know, when I did Love Striven Flower and Time Striven Flower, I really wanted it to be single view, first person, because Lily was so confused. She didn't know what the heck Donovan was thinking, and I wanted the reader to have that same experience. But then when it came to do Scary Monsters and Something to Dream On, and I wanted more points of view, I went to do third person both times, and I couldn't do it. And I wound up doing the 3 different points of view, the alternating points of view. And
yeah,
that's what works for me. And so I think that's what I'm sticking to.
Yeah, I have to say I enjoyed that because it was not confusing. The way you wrote it was not confusing at all. So I knew whose head I was
Thank
in
you.
At each point. And that was helpful.
Thank you.
But I think that's what you guys are saying, is you like to write from the perspective of your main character, mostly.
Right, and if I go into third person, I'm more likely to get blocked.
Okay. So there, that's Here comes me and my crazy terms. Here comes writer's constipation.
Oh, my God.
I know. Writer's constipation. Please do not write in third person omniscient, because that is going to lock me up for days. That is never good. I write both. And I do write the third person for, like, my criminal erotic series is all in third person, omniscient. But you do know who's talking when I'm in a particular character's area. So that at least is not confusing. But I do write first person when I write erotica, because I just find that more interesting. It is all specifically from the viewpoint of Xaviera. So I don't know. I just find it more fun. You want to see what she's seeing, feel what she's feeling. And if you want your reader to feel that, going into first person helps with that. So that keeps that flowing. But what about you, Jamie, with yours?
Oh, I write all over the place. No, I'm just kidding. I write first person and third person, but it just depends on the story. I think I'm kind of like you. If it's a romance, a lot of times if I want the reader to really get into the character, I write it in third person when it comes to romances, but the thing about the romances that I write in third person, it's very clear. A paragraph that's from the female point of view as he's touching her skin, and then the second paragraph from the male as he's forcing his hand over there. But you know what I'm saying? So you're feeling both sides of the situation. In the first person, I think I go with my action and mystery series. They're usually my first person series, as I like to put those into first person. So it really just depends upon the story I want to relay. But I think what the big topic that we're talking about here is that, it comes back to what we've been talking about almost this whole hour, is being true to the story, being true to your characters, and being true to your voice. That will overcome most writer block.
Right.
Do you guys all agree with that? I mean, is that the major
Agreed.
Takeaway of this show, is those points? Be true to the story. If you're going to
yep.
go taboo, go to the extreme. You know, be true to it, because there are people out there who want to hear it. Be true to the characters, and be true to yourself, and all the other stuff just falls away.
You're right.
Oh. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that is the best takeaway from it. When you get stuck, maybe it's because you've wandered away from being where you need to be, who you are. So go back to your center. Now I sound like you, Jamie.
That's what besties do. We sound like each other all the time.
Let me just go zen and be at my center. That's what you got to do. You're right. And Diane's right. And Gracie, you're right. So I think we've gotten to the point now where I get to be personal. Y'all know I get to ask you each a personal question so that the readers can get to know you and the listeners can get to know you. And I delved a little bit into each one of you when you weren't looking. I'm sorry. I was stalking you.
Oh, no.
Oh, Jesus.
Just a little bit. Oh, it's never that bad. So my first question is going to be to Miss Gracie. What is your go-to song when you sing karaoke?
It's Adele, Somebody Like You, or Stay by Sugarland.
Sugarland?
Yeah, it's always sad and depressing. I envy the people who are up there and like singing like, you know, funky white boy songs, and I'm sitting there, you know, heartbreaking songs here.
Is that part of your Scottish ancestry?
Probably. That's probably why.
See, I read up on you. I knew. When I saw you like to go sing karaoke sometimes, I said, oh, I got to ask what she sings. I need to know. So you like to get depressing and get people
oh, yeah.
Trying
like, everybody's... I went to an author signing in March, and everybody's singing these upbeat songs, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to rock out Adele. Let's just go there. And it was at, like, a bowling alley, and it was all upbeat, and everybody's dancing, and then I came on. I was like, yeah, I suck. I know. It's okay.
So Grace is going to make you cry, just in case you were wondering.
Yes.
All right. Well, Diane, what's the craziest cake? Because a lot of people don't know that you do artisan cakes. Uh-huh. What is the craziest cake anyone has ever asked you to make or you decided to make for a special occasion? And Racy is okay, so let's hear it.
Okay. The craziest I was asked to make, and I very politely declined this, and it's actually not that crazy because apparently people do this all the time, but I just wasn't going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked to make a baby shower cake that looked like the baby. So she had already had the baby, and they wanted a cake that looked just like the baby. And I thought, what if I did it? First of all, what if I did it? I just did a terrible job because faces are so hard to do. So there was that. But what would be worse is if I did it and it looked just like the picture, but the mom thought it was ugly. Wouldn't that be horrible?
That would be
horrible. And I also kept thinking, what flavor would I make it? Red velvet? So that when you cut it open, it bleeds?
My
brain went all over the place. So I'm like, you know what? I'm booked that weekend. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants a bleeding baby cake.
The craziest one
I did do,
I was asked to do a Star Destroyer cake for a wedding that took place at Industrial Light and Magic on one of the sound stages Star Wars was shot on. So
cool.
I did a stand-up three-dimensional Star Destroyer, and I brought it in, and everybody geeked out so much over it. They pulled out two 20K spotlights and cross-aimed it on the theme. They're like, oh, my God, we have this laser upstairs. Let's go aim it on the bridge. And so they went up into the rafters and mounted a laser pointing straight down onto the bridge of the cake. My husband helped me wire lights onto the back of it so the jet engines on the back lit. So it was this, it was totally cool. I am so freaking proud of that cake. I've never done anything to top that, and I doubt I ever will.
Okay, if you've got pictures, we're asking you now, put them out there.
Okay, there are some on my Facebook page. There are some out there on the web. I actually got very minorly famous for it. But yeah.
That's awesome. I love it.
Yay.
And they invited my husband and I to the wedding, so we actually went out and got uniforms. And so we went. The whole thing was dark side themed. It was a phenomenal wedding. Darth Vader presided. It was in the George Lucas Theater. Everybody was dressed appropriately. The bride was in the Leia bush fighter costume, and the groom was in the stormtrooper outfit, and behind them there were stormtroopers and TIE fighters, and as you drove up, stormtroopers lined the street. It was incredible.
Oh, my God. I would have loved that.
It was awesome.
I would have been geeked out right there with everybody else, so. God. And Jamie, look at that.
Yeah.
Our hour's almost there.
Yeah, we're running out of time, and I always hate this time because we always have to say goodbye, but it's a good time because we get to go ahead and tell our readers where everybody can find our book. So, Gracie, if you could go ahead and give us some of your social media links so that we can socially acceptably stalk you, maybe get a book or two.
All my books are Amazon exclusive. So you just go on Amazon.com and you put in Gracie Wilson and you will have my 5 books pop up there. I have a website, GracieWilsonAuthor.com, and I post everything up there that's new and that's been released on that page, and I keep it up to date. Facebook is honestly the best way to, you know, stalk me, I guess would be the way to put it, and I get to see some new insights on what's coming out for me in the future. And if you go on Facebook, I actually have like a fan group because Facebook sucks, and it doesn't let people see our posts on our pages anymore. We actually have to have, like, groups so we can post stuff so people actually see it. So I have a Gracie Wilson author fan page. That's a group on Facebook that you can go and add yourself to, and my TA will accept you so you can see all my new releases and what I'm working on and where I'm going to be.
Very cool.
Wonderful. And Diane?
The usual suspects, Twitter, Facebook. I have Facebook under Diane Ranella Author. Plus, I have a personal page that I accept most friend requests on. If you go to DianeRanellaAuthor.com, I have a blog on there that's got everything from recipes from my former life as a pastry chef to information about what I'm working on, to for those of you who have read my Forbidden Flower books or have found themselves in a similar situation, there is the Friends of Lily section that I encourage you to go to. You have friends out there who want to talk to you, and it's a great resource for people. Yeah, and you can find me on Amazon. All my books are on Amazon. Scary Monsters is also on Barnes & Noble. And I'll have Witcher Carrie coming out probably the beginning of next year, which is not a sequel but another book in the Scary Monsters universe.
Very good. Yay. Very good.
Thank you so much. How about you, Michelle?
Oh, and on Facebook, I have the
Go ahead.
On Facebook, I have Diane Ranella's a Modster Squad, M-O-D-S-T-E-R Squad. So come join the Mod Squad.
and that just brought me back to the 70s, but yeah.
I was just thinking short skirts and high boots, knee-high boots. Yep, I was
the white leather boots.
I had no idea what you guys were talking about until I heard the 70s, and I was like, I don't know what they're talking about.
It goes back to embracing your quirks and putting them in the writing.
There you go.
That's right.
Well, you can also find me on Amazon.com and under Michelle E. Gwynn, and you can find me on Kobo, iTunes, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble. You can come visit me on my website, which is MichelleEGwynnAuthor.com. And definitely come visit there because you can sign up for my newsletter, and I do monthly giveaways, and June is coming up, so there will be another one. And you can find me here every Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with Jamie and our wonderful guest. And what about you, Jamie?
You can find me on Facebook at Author Jamie Brumfield. That's J-A-M-I. And then Brumfield is B-R-U-M-F-I-E-L-D. On the top of my Facebook page is a sign-up link to go ahead and sign up for my newsletter. I also do monthly giveaways of my newsletter and I do little raffles and things like that. So I would love to have you join the newsletter. You can find all my books on Amazon. I'm starting to branch out with some of my books are going to other areas, but they haven't made it there yet. But you can find all my books on Amazon. And I have a brand new release that just released yesterday. It's my very first romantic comedy, which is also a dark fantasy. So I hope you can check that out. It's called Father Made Me Do It, and it's part of the Demon Ascension series, and you can also check out my party this weekend, Demon Ascension series introduction party on Facebook. So hope to see you there.
Absolutely.
It's been a great hour, and we have thoroughly enjoyed chatting and getting to know everyone better. Michelle and I would love to have you all come back for another show in the future. And does anybody have anything else they'd like to add before I close out the show?
I think I'm actually going to be back next week with you.
You are.
I'll be back to you next month.
You sure are.
Awesome.
And I was going to go ahead and mention that. Join us next week when guest authors Diane Ranella, Kelly Cazone, Palessa, and Isabella Bowe joins us for Teaser Pleaser Week. And I guess you can imagine what that's going to be all about. So I guess we're running out of time. So it's time to say good night. And Michelle?
And catch you on
the flip side.
You just can't get
Have a great night, everyone.
Good night.